Warren Ingram with Personal Finance. I've got a question for you, Warren Ingram. Which family got 165 billion rand richer today?
The Waltons.
That's pretty good going. You can't see my piece of paper. We've got a computer screen between us. How do you know that?
Because I watched Walmart share price go up and by a heck of a large amount today. And I thought, well, if you're talking about a family with that kind of size of money, it must be very few.
You're very good at this game. Yep, the Waltons, the descendants of Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart. They're still big shareholders of Walmart, of course. The company controls Massmart, reporting the strongest sales in more than a decade today, sending the shares up 11% in the fortunes of the Walton family. Name the five kids in the Walton family.
I can't do that. I don't care.
Alice, Jim, Rob, Lucas with a K, and Christy. Their collective net wealth surged to $163 billion.
Just the rise in their value today makes me not want to know their names and not care about them ever again.
But here's the point, and that is that Sam Walton started Walmart probably 50, 60 years ago, and the family has stayed invested in that particular business, and they've ridden the good times, and they've had some bad times, and they've come unstuck, I'm sure, at various points. But they've stayed invested through difficult times and good times.
And 100%. And also that they've allowed, they've allowed the company to follow a course without interfering. You know, they've recognized along the way that their skill set isn't in running a retailer of that size, a global logistics business that happens to do a bit of retail on the side. And they've allowed, competent quality managers to do their thing. And so, two things, long-term focus and then, get out of the way of the people that can do the job better for you. And I think that's those are two good lessons for me.
And those lessons then come forward to the rest of us, of course. And the rest of us, very few of us have got time to sit at our laptops and look at the minutiae of moves in the market and do fundamental analysis on each and every single company announcement that comes out. So we need to rely on others to do the work for us. Either we get a fund manager to manage our money directly and we have we pay them a fee to do so, or we invest in index funds in order to manage our money.
Yeah.
Simply enough.
And I actually just seen where you were going with this Walmart thing. Jeez, that's amazing.
How do you like the connection?
That was incredible. So I agree with you 100%. Actually, it wasn't even where I was going. That's great, Bruce. So I think, to talk to investors today, if we're sitting here looking at what's going on in the world, it was already complex for us, a year or two ago with just so many different variables impacting us and things that we just couldn't control just in South Africa. And now all of a sudden the rest of the world is probably even more volatile than it is for us. So we've got a sort of a doubling or a tripling of the range of factors that could change our fortunes in a very short space of time. And so for investors trying to anticipate all of this and then trying to make big decisions, a couple of things are going to happen. Either they're going to develop a drinking habit because, that's one way to calm down. Secondly, they get kind of stuck in a whirlwind of indecision because there are so many things that could go wrong and could change. And what about this and what about that? That they just do nothing. Or they start to make very radical steps. Let's just sell all the shares, what the Walton family didn't do, and just go to cash and just wait for everything to get better, and then one day we'll go back in again. And that history has shown time and time again to be a terrible decision, a terrible way of managing your money, because typically what happens is you sell just before the markets do fall, so sometimes you can get that right, and then you buy in again after the crash, after the recovery, just before the next crash, and that's been proven time and time again. Thousands and nowadays millions of investors seem to do this with almost spectacular imperfection.
And so what do we do then? I mean, you go to investment conferences and people talk about protecting the downside and talk about very complex investment strategies, which 99.9% of people are incapable of comprehending, never mind applying. There are tax consequences the moment you sell assets and buy other assets. It's a very complicated world. So how do we, as ordinary human beings who squirrel away, hopefully a little bit of money every single month, how do we act in times of difficulty? And let's face it, I mean, the news flow around South Africa, although politically things are much better, and in terms of state-owned enterprises, we've got better boards, and we've got a new head of the National Prosecuting Authority in an acting capacity. All sorts of things, the building blocks are in place, and that's great. But the economy is in trouble. Moody's warning yesterday we're not moving fast enough. HSBC warning that we probably are in recession, and official data may confirm that in the next 3 weeks or so. And all of this negativity, how do we act in the sea of worry?
So I think the trick here is to actually turn this entire situation on its head. You know, you can make investment decisions based on the things that you know and the very few things in all of this that you can control. And what's really interesting about this is if you make decisions based on the things that are particular to you and to the situations that you can control, over long periods of time, you end up making really good, really sensible decisions that look really brilliant and genius with the benefit of hindsight. And all you've done is invest according to your life and how things work for you. And so to me, a couple of things, you know, kick in here. Number one, you know, one principle is if we're talking about protecting your capital against inflation and trying to get some capital capital growth over long periods of time, you have to have an investment in shares. Everybody needs some money in shares eventually. And I think one of the things to understand there is that you can't have less than about a third. It's actually about 35% of your money has to be in shares. It could be in a unit trust. It could be in an index. It could be in your retirement fund. It doesn't matter where it is, but you need that exposure. And so as a starting point, if you're sitting today, you know, listening to this, knowing that you've got all your money in the bank because you didn't know what else to do with it, you just know that you're doing yourself a major disservice and you need to start getting some exposure to shares. On the flip side, if you've been riding the tiger of the stock markets, especially internationally, and you've got, you know, close to 100% of all of your investments in shares, then the likelihood is you've got too much. And what you need to do is reduce it. So you need to have a range somewhere between 35 and 75%. And why that's important is suddenly you start to look at this whole situation and you don't need to worry about what's Trump going to do next week? You know, what's happening with Turkey? You can start to say, hang on, my situation dictates that I need some exposure to shares. And I've either got too much or too little, and therefore I need to start getting into that market. And as I said, you can do it in a unit trust, you can do it in an index. That doesn't really matter too much. You just need to be cost effective and clever about it. And then exactly how much you should have in shares, to me, you make the decision based on how long have you got to invest the money. So the longer you've got, you know, once you go over five years or longer, you can invest more and more in shares. And financially, if you can afford to leave the money invested for a long period of time, then again, you can put more money in shares. And then the last one, which is a bit of psychology and really hard to figure out, is what are you going to do one day when the market does crash? Because it is going to do that. It could be next week or it could be in 10 years time. We don't know. Because if you're going to panic and react badly, then you can't have too much money in shares. So suddenly you're starting to make decisions based on things that are known to you. You are the only expert about your situation, and that's all you have to do. That's all you actually have to be the expert in, because frankly, none of us, there isn't a single economist out there or trader or anybody that can figure out what's going to happen to these investment markets in the next week. You know, we can give you a really good, hopefully informed opinion, and then we'll really give you a fantastic explanation as to why we were wrong, but we don't know. And so what you can do then is take control of the situation like that. And I think the other one that's kind of on top of everyone's mind at the moment is the rand. You know, what do I do with the rand? It was great and suddenly it's at, you know, 14, and it could be at 15, or it could be back at 12, you know, just dependent on what goes on. And again, those are difficult decisions. So what I'd say is everybody needs about 25% of their investments to be overseas as a bare minimum. You know, so that typically would happen in most balanced unit trusts. They would have about 25%. So you might already have that exposure. But if you don't, well, you need to start building that exposure. And if you belong to a really wealthy family where you know there's going to be money that's going to the third or the fourth generation, then you need to have a lot more exposed to international investment. So that's really the range. And again, that starts to help you make a decision. And then just be patient with the rand. You know, when the rand, it will get back to a level of 13 rand 50 or stronger to the dollar, then decide to start sending your money out to the right proportion for you. And you don't have to time the markets. You don't have to be a genius. Just pick your level. I think 1350 is a good one, and wait for the market to come back to you. Does it happen in a week or a month or a year? I don't know. But you don't have to worry and fret about those things anymore.
Our human instinct, however, is on a day like yesterday to think the world is falling apart. Our chicken licking syndrome. The moment an acorn falls in our head, we believe it's the sky falling in our head. And sometimes you just have to calm that down.
Yeah. And just take a big step back and just look at the situation and say, well, actually, not much of this was really to do with South Africa. You know, these were international factors. Sure, there were a couple of South African factors around, but a lot of this was about international factors. And obviously, the hype was to make it all about South Africa. It was all about our issues. And truthfully, it really wasn't, because if internationally there was good news yesterday, the rand would have been strong, the market would have been fine. So we have to have a perspective on those things. And we've been saying For years now, Naspers is due for some kind of a drop. We don't know why, we don't know when, but it's going to happen. Well, guess what had happened? The Earth didn't, you know, the Earth didn't collapse, and the world carried on, and the market's gone up again. So I guess, you know, maintain a perspective. Don't be too panicky.
Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital playing Dr. Phil this evening on The Money Show with more hair.